and welcome to episode 4 of That Yoga Woman's podcast, a podcast where yogis, yoga teachers, and studio owners share stories of their lives on and off the mat. I'm Jules Buchanan, a yoga teacher and your host. This week, I'm talking to Zoe Rowe. She's a London-based yoga teacher and a really, really good friend of mine. We did our teacher training together in 2017, and we've been to like different workshops, different training and events together ever since. Zoe's got an infectious enthusiasm and she really puts everything into what she's passionate about. It's always an absolute pleasure to spend time with her. We have a real good laugh. Her first yoga class was a hot yoga session 10 years ago, and she still loves a really strong practice and enjoys getting super sweaty on her mat. Following the teacher training that we did, Zoe worked full-time in a yoga studio in Milton Keynes after studying for her master's degree and then her PhD at nearby Cranfield University. She then got her dream corporate job with Unilever and made the tough decision to ramp down her yoga teaching to focus on her career in consumer insight research and sustainability. Followed by a swift move to a different category, which came with a relocation to London, then in quick succession, she took a further step up to move into her ultimate dream job as a social innovation consultant. So, don't know what that is really. We'll get Zoe to talk to us more about that when we speak to her. She now balances teaching yoga with a full-time career. She set up her own classes in Walthamstow, and she now teaches at a yoga studio in East London. Passionate about social change and supporting others, she also runs the Odd Supper Club in aid of her local food bank, Heat or Eat. Hi, so thank you and welcome to That Yoga Woman's podcast, Zoe.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. How have you been?
Yeah, really well, really well. How have you been?
I've been good too. Ups and downs, like I think everyone has been. Yeah. Have you been working from home for the past few months?
Yes, I have. I've really enjoyed it actually. And I feel really bad saying that because so many people are hating lockdown and I've really enjoyed it. I'm not going to lie. I've done more reading. I've done DIY around the house. I say we.
Is that the royal we?
Yeah. I've been doing more yoga because it can just do it in my living room. Yeah, I've just really enjoyed it.
So what DIY have you been doing?
So we bought some paint to do the skirting boards and the doors, to be continued. Ross has been making some shelves for our TV stand.
Great.
He made a wardrobe, rails.
What?
In one of the alcoves, I know. There's like hanging plants come up everywhere. Like it's been successful.
That's good. It sounds like it's definitely the royal we. You said it's me. We've done this, not so much me. So you say you've been working from home. Just explain a bit about your day job. Because when we say social innovation consultant, what is that? What does it actually mean, please?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I've been there for like 8 months now and I'm only just getting my head around what this means. Ultimately, we are a social innovation design agency that only focuses on projects for social impact. So, for example, we might be focusing on something like cancer. So cancer support from Macmillan was one of the projects they worked on before I started. And rather than companies thinking about solutions for people, we are like human centered. So we work with the people that are impacted with whatever you're trying to solve so that the solutions are human centered. And those solutions might be products or services or systems. But ultimately, it's working with the people to go through the research, the co-creation and prototyping to get to a better solution.
Wow, it sounds quite in-depth when you explain it. Thank you. So how have you been balancing yoga with your career? Both like your own practice, teaching with your full-time work.
So on lockdown, it's been great. I've been doing more yoga, but if we think like going back before lockdown, So before I worked in this job, life was very different and very busy, and there was no time for yoga, and it was just like work. But I'm super lucky that in this job, there's like a culture around well-being and no working overtime. There's kind of flexi hours, whatever days, hours of the day works best for you. I could nip off at lunchtime and do a yoga class, or you know, make up the hours in the morning if I want to do it. So
before that, when you were at the previous gig, it was 9 to 5 wasn't even, it was full on, no time.
I mean, I'd get in maybe a yoga class a week or something. I didn't really feel like the energy to do my own practice. It would be mainly on the weekend that I would do yoga, whereas now, new job, I would do about 2 or 3 times a week. In lockdown, much more.
Well, it's different when you can access it from your living room, isn't it?
Yeah, just roll out of bed. Don't know how healthy that is, though. I worry about that more people are just kind of rolling out of bed or off their chair and throwing themselves into shape.
Sleepy yoga.
Yeah, more injuries.
So when you was that one of the reasons you changed companies? Because of the lifestyle that the new company was kind of, did they say that was one of the good reasons for moving to them? Or could you just see
it? No, actually, I didn't know before. When I applied, it was more because I wanted to get into the world of kind of social innovation. Mm. That was my main goal, is I've always wanted to kind of, big corporate world before this was a stepping stone to be able to get into this world.
Okay.
But then I found out about their well-being focus, and it was just, yeah, even better.
Oh, and so it is your dream job.
Yeah.
Oh,
it really
is.
So
nice.
I'm so grateful. It's crazy. I really wait until I wake up from this little bubble or the rose tinted glass, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, still 8 months. Yeah, 8 months in, and part of that being a pandemic, it might be a bit. It's still potentially a honeymoon period, isn't it? But
fingers crossed.
And when did you move to London from Milton Keynes? Like, how long have you been down there now? I can't keep track.
I think we have been down here. Well, I was working in previous role in Unilever in London for a year. Mm-hmm. And then I've been in this job for like 8 months. So we've been down here for like, yeah, around that.
That's gone so fast. So how is living in London? In the London. I don't know why I said that, just actual London. I did this before in episode 1, I was talking to Amy. I was like, how is the yoga? And I kept saying the, I have to stop that. So yeah, how is the big smoke? That's better.
Yeah, it's really good. I think when I lived in Australia, I came back because I really wanted to live in London and experience London. All my friends were there and my sister had moved there, and it sounded all, you know, exciting and great. So I think I've always yearned to have time in London, and now I'm here. I love it.
When did you live in Australia then?
So I did my undergraduate in Australia. Me and my best friend went traveling, and then we went to Australia and I absolutely loved it. And I was supposed to go back to England and do a marketing degree, because I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do, in Birmingham, which is way too close to home to go to uni.
Yeah.
And I knew I didn't really want to do it, but I was all confused. And then I was in Australia and I was like, oh my God, I don't want to leave. So when we were looking for jobs, I also sneakily looked for uni courses, and then rang home and basically was like, I don't want to come home. I want to stay here. And I think my parents were so worried about me and what I was going to do with my life. They're like, okay.
Was it expensive to study out there?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no denying it. It was a nightmare.
Mom and Dad.
Oh my God. So, because they were like, oh yeah, when I lived in Australia, it's like, you're not that old. Like, when did you live there as a small child? Oh, it all makes sense now. So, you did your uni degree there and then you came home. So, really, this whole Milton Keynes, what was that? It's like a blip. You're supposed to be coming home and coming straight to live in London. What made you come back to MK?
Oh, well, I did live in London and I was looking for work, and it's hard to just get a gig there.
Yeah.
And then I did an internship in like a goods agency in Birmingham. thinking like, yeah, I'm going to be an advertiser. It's going to be like Mad Men. I'm going to be like drinking whiskey and all creative. It was not like that. Everyone was really stressed and miserable. And it was the most grey office I've ever seen. So I left and then I was like, okay, back to the drawing board. What am I going to do? And I realised I needed to go back and study, which is why I went to Cranfield near Bedford to study.
Okay. So that's where the PhD at Cranfield comes in.
Yeah, that wasn't planned.
So do you feel like living in London suits you now?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I mean, we've just bought a house and it was our 1 year anniversary at the weekend for our house, which is super exciting.
I saw that. Well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, we're pretty settled. Yeah, super exciting. So I can't see us moving anytime soon. Like, we've got a nice little house and it's in a nice area, like outside of the, it's in Walthamstow, so kind of east. E17 to be precise.
See, the novelty's worn off now. One of my best mates lived in Walthamstow when she just finished uni. So yeah, we had all that joke then, like, oh, E17, where are they? I was roaming the streets looking for Brian, and I didn't find him. Brian and Tony.
Yeah, Brian and his big jacket. I haven't seen him.
Keep your eyes peeled though, because he must still be there.
Every day.
So what's your favourite thing about living in the capital?
I think initial reaction would be there's always something to do. Obviously, it's really close to the city, but then we never go into the city. So I think that's a default answer. I really love being close to a lot of friends. My sister lives literally up the road and my new niece is there as well. So I think that's probably the best thing at the moment. And like, there's so many good yoga studios and teachers here, which is a massive bonus. I think they're the main three.
So you said it's there's loads of teachers there. That leads me to come on to another question. How challenging has it been to secure work in London as a yoga teacher? Do I need to even answer that?
I think I need a gin. yeah, wowzers. It's bloody hard. It's so challenging. I mean, I feel like it's quite soul destroying. It feels like you need to either be someone or have like thousands of followers. So coming outside of London and being a nobody is, yeah, it's super hard. You knock on loads of studio doors and you don't really get an answer. But then now I realise the teachers they have are pretty amazing, well-known people. So then it's really hard to get your foot in the door anywhere. To become, you know, well known or get all those followers or whatever you want to be. So that was a challenge. So I set up my own class in Walthamstow, which I thought, yeah, it's going to be great. Loads of people will come because there's not much going on. And then it turns out there's loads of teachers in Walthamstow doing the same thing. And there's an incredible studio, which is really big. And there's another studio in the climbing place. So that was tough. It was tough. But I think I've come to terms with it now.
Did you take it personally?
Yeah, I think at the beginning I did. It's just like rejection, isn't it? You feel like you're constantly trying and selling yourself, and you don't get anything back. But I think that's another like good yoga thing, is putting everything into perspective of, okay, why am I getting annoyed with this? Why am I frustrated? And then trying to balance kind of what I want to do as a teacher. And that led me to set up my own thing.
So how did you get on with your own classes? Did you like being able to be creative and stuff?
Yeah, I like the freedom of not being stuck to kind of studio rules necessarily and be able to do my own thing, which was great. But I also thought, ooh, it'll be more monetizing because all of these people are going to come and I'll be able to have all the money. So it'll be worthwhile. I can do the advertising. But not that many people came. And you have to pay for the space as well, which is expensive in London. I mean, I did end up getting quite a good deal. And then I had to learn very quickly how to advertise myself, flyering, dabbling, kind of like Facebook ads that who knows if they were successful or not. But it just came to a bit of a standstill because I felt like the effort that I had to put in to kind of sell it and spread my reach and get new people in and having a full-time job was too much. So I went back to the studio drawing board.
So what other challenges have you faced then? I know you mentioned about Facebook ads being a bit hit and miss.
Yeah, I don't think I really understand it. Social media in general, like I wasn't really a social media person and I've had to really get to grips with what the hell I'm doing. And regularly posting and all of that stuff. It's like a full-time job. So I think I got a bit like stressed and obsessed with that. Whereas now I'm a bit more relaxed about, okay, just post a little bit more often, but don't stress about it having to be something profound every day. And, you know, this whole strategy, which I'm sure works for some people, but I don't understand it. So it's a happy medium.
It's hard, isn't it? It's hard to think about things like that. Like in lockdown, I know I've hardly posted anything. I was looking back over my Instagram posts. Most of my posts are when I've been out and about. Oh, I'm in this studio now trying this. Oh, I'm on holiday here. Look at me. I'm on this beach, not like sunning myself, but prancing around with a windswept Scottish wind blowing. And then you just think, oh, last month, like I've just not been anywhere. So I've not wanted to post anything. It's not that, you know, it's weird. It's hard to know what to post when you just feel a bit like, oh, I don't really want to post anything.
Yeah. And then you feel pressured to be like, oh, I better go into the garden and sit by the rose bush. I actually did that. So that I've got to post. And it's like, this is not me.
So it's clear, Zoe, from your work, your social media, which obviously I've had a look at, but your fundraising as well, which we'll come on to, your website as well, that you've got a big, big love of food. I mean, we all love food, but would you consider yourself a foodie?
I love food. I love, love, love food. So me and my boyfriend, every time we go on holiday, we try and go to find the best cuisines or like really niche weird stuff. And then if we go to like bigger, far like outside of Europe countries, actually no, we did it in Italy as well. We'll do a cooking course of the local cuisine. Highly recommend tagine making in Morocco.
Okay.
Been my favorite so far. But even in Italy, we went into this like local nonna's house and she taught us how to make pasta from scratch. We've never been able to recreate it, but yeah, we love food, love trying new things. We cook every day as well. So yeah, really like
I hadn't really thought of that. I've done a little bit of that. I went to Japan and with James and we did sushi making. We went to this lady's house and there was like another couple of couples and it was really cool. Like we didn't just do sushi. We did like a soup and we did loads of stuff. Again, I bought like loads of stuff, seaweed and things to bring home with me. I've not managed to recreate it since I did a bit of the miso soup, but yes, it's not the same when you can just buy it. But yeah, it's so good that, like you said, tagine making in Morocco is your tagine making in Morocco. No,
Morocco.
Tagine making in Morocco. Is that was your favourite?
Yeah, really yummy. Of course, we ended up then bringing back three tagines that we've used three times. They take up a lot of space.
I've got a tagine. I do like making a tagine, but it's a lot of faff. I'm not very good with herbs and spices. And how does Russ accept this experimental style?
He's just learned to love it. But he's so funny because he'll have a recipe, and especially if it's baking, he'll be like, Zoe, it's a science, you've got to follow the recipe. Whereas I'm a little bit more, no, like I'll look at three different recipes and then be like, that sounds crap, that sounds great. Okay, we'll just mix these together and see what happens.
I was going to be really sexist and say, oh, that's such a man way of looking at it. But I think it's not, it's just a different way of the brain working, isn't it? That's like the different way the brain works, I suppose, like the left and the right side.
Yeah, but also with baking, I've had 100% unsuccess rate of winging it, because it is a little bit more like science when you're trying to bake cakes and breads and things like that. So it's fine for cooking main meals, but I've learned not to mess with it when it comes to baking.
I did notice the other day you baked your own bread. I mean, was it successful, would you say? You said you had 100%, let's not call it unsuccess rate, let's call it a fail rate. So 100% fail rate with your baking. So why was it, I noticed it looked really small, this loaf of bread. What was going on with it?
Bless it. It was so small. It didn't rise. I had the wrong tin. So I ordered a bigger tin and we had a slightly more successful raised loaf. But bread is a little bit of a sore topic to me because I went on the bandwagon of let's do sourdough starter because everyone on Instagram is doing it and it looks great. So I tried one. Nothing happened. It died. I resurrected it, thought it was going to happen. It died again. And then I was just like, I'm done with this. And yeast wasn't a thing. Like, it was gold dust. So my dad sent me down some yeast from Worcestershire. I don't even know if that's legal. But I baked I baked the bread with that. And that was successful. So I thought maybe I just need yeast in my life. But then after my little successful bread splurt, when I'm using yeast, and then the shop started selling bread, flour and yeast, so then happy days. Last weekend, I thought I'm going to dabble back in the sourdough starter, fed it for the first time, and it started to like do its thing, start or whatever the word is, and then it bloody died again. So anybody who's got any tips, throw them my way.
I'm definitely going to be giving your contact details at the end of this. So you can email Zoe with your how to cook sourdough hints and tips, and she'll be most grateful for them. So do you do all the cooking at home?
I think it's joint, really. Me and Ross will cook at the same time. We tend to like, it's more of a social thing. So we'll be in the kitchen chatting, having a bit of wine, cooking, unless I'm like, I don't know, having to plan a class or in a mood, then I'll sit on the sofa while he cooks. But it tends to be a joint thing.
It sounds a really silly thing to say because I can't imagine you in a mood. You're always so positive and excited and energetic. I can't imagine you being in a mood. What's that look like?
Yeah, it's quite, I don't know if it's a mood, it's like irritable. Something will happen and I'm just like grumpy. I think it's when I'm stressed or I've got lots of things on my to-do list and then I get over it really quickly. I think it's mainly Ross gets the back end of it. No one else ever sees it. But with him, I'm just like, God's sake, why is the butter left out? Why is the toilet lid up again?
How has your relationship with food evolved over the past few years?
I've always had a really tough relationship with my gut, especially when I was a lot younger. I was constantly bloated, really uncomfortable, massively affect my mood. And it's something I've had to really fight with a lot. And when I was in Australia, I went to see a naturopath and I got a test. She tested my urine with, I think it was like pH. And out of five, mine was like four, as in one of the worst. And she said, you need to like deal with this because you could get leaky gut syndrome. And it was a bit of a slap in the face. But then the diet for it was like bloody rabbit food. So I tried it, but it was a time in my life when I really liked to drink and party and eat bad stuff. So it didn't really work. So it's been an ongoing kind of battle, but I think as I've got older and understood what flares it up and what doesn't, and more of a balanced lifestyle, it's got loads better. And lockdown has been so good for my gut health because I'm cooking everything. And I've noticed that if I'm kind of mentally happy and calm, it also has an effect on my gut. So at the moment we're in a happy place with Gutville.
So Gutville, when it's not a happy place, what does that mean? Like you said, there's bloating.
Really gassy, but like quite, this might be too much information, like quite pungently stinky gassy. And just constantly really uncomfortable, and it really affects my mood. And it's basically candida as well. So it's all like gut what's the word, like bacteria growth, and yeah, it's really uncomfortable.
So do you drink those little shots with the good bacteria in? What are that, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, what are they called? Actimel or something like that.
I'm sure there's other brands available, but do you know, like, is that supposed to be good for you?
Yeah, no, I don't have those, to be fair. What used to help me was apple cider vinegar in water. When it was really bad, I used to have that in the mornings. And I think it was oregano oil as well. They really cured when I was in a really bad state. Now I just try and have probiotic tablets and krill oil.
Yeah, I suppose that apple cider water vinegar sounds like something you're going to clean the windows with, but you said that was a good reminds me of those ladies that were on the telly with their cleaning program. I can't remember the names now, you know, the women I mean.
Yeah
maybe one had dark hair and glasses and the other one was like had blonde.
Yeah. Oh dear, it worked anyway.
Good. It works. Don't diss it, Jules. Don't like it. Yeah. Diss it. So when and how did the idea of hosting a supper club in aid of your local food bank come about?
So I've always wanted to do something like that. I saw them popping up and I love food and like I love good causes. So I wanted to help our local food bank. So I used to volunteer for a food bank in Bedford. And I know that kind of donations, especially like sanitary products and toiletries and non-canned stuff, they really struggle to get hold of. So I liked the thought of doing a supper club and kind of making people more aware of what you can cook with less, and also have an opportunity as a collecting food and toiletry donations for the local food bank. So kind of bringing together two worlds that I'm very passionate about. That's where it kind of came about. Mm. And yeah, it was really good fun. Very stressful. God, it's a lot of work, but rewarding in the end.
Yeah, I think I'd not thought about that. You think of food banks, like you say, you think of pasta and tins of stuff. You don't think about, well, I wouldn't have thought about sanitary products or toiletries, or you just think of tins and pasta, but obviously more is needed. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think people underestimate how much food banks do, especially in COVID and lockdown. We're doing a project at the moment that's kind of talking to some food banks, and it's just like people really rely on them. And I think we don't really understand the amount of people that do rely on food banks in the UK, which is awful. But we also, I think, need to not just give tins of beans and pasta, which is amazing, but they really struggle with like cold items and fruits and vegetables and healthy stuff and toiletries. So donate those.
Well, I will now, I understand. So are you going to plan more of those in events in the future?
Yeah, I'd really like to, but the biggest learning is to get help. It was me doing the food and Ross also helping. And then I didn't realise they had a hob at the venue that we did the yoga and the supper club at. So I kind of went there early, got the table set up because we're going to eat outside because the weather was lovely. But then Ross came just before the end in an Uber with pots of hot food and like all the other food stuff to then serve in the kitchen. And then we found out there was a bloody hob that we could have done it all on. And then it started raining and it was really windy. So we sat outside and the bloody tablecloths are wafting around and everyone's like, oh, this is nice. Yeah, I'm scarred. but it was a good learning, and yeah, it was super, super rewarding. And I definitely want to do it again, just with more help.
And let me just clarify, I've been calling your boyfriend Russ. Is it Ross?
Ross.
I'm sure you called him Rusty. Like, oh, yeah, I thought it was, you called him Rusty before. Like,
so on his Instagram, his name is Rusty. Because when he was in Africa, there was a young boy went up to him and said, oh, your hair is rusty. because he's strawberry blonde.
Ginger. Yeah, I was gonna say, just let's explain, he's Ginger. Okay, so his name isn't Russ, it's Ross. So the whole time I've been calling him Russ. The whole time I've known you. Not that I've seen him many times, but that's like, yeah, okay. He must have that a lot there, right? Or does he not call himself Rusty anymore? Now he's grown up and like properly working, it's just Ross.
Yeah, it's just Ross. Just Ross.
Just Ross. Okay. Just apologise for him and for me. And what are you most proud of achieving so far?
Oh my God, that's a big question, isn't it? I think it's hard to say about yourself because, I don't know, I'm often striving for something else and always go, 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 that I don't sit back and actually reflect. But I think, I generally think that my kind of, I'm proud of where I'm at from kind of being a very confused person when I was like supposed to be going to uni, to then going against people saying, just get a job, just get a job. Like, you just need to do this, you just need to do that. And I didn't settle for going into something that I knew I wasn't passionate about. So all of these kind of nips and turns and career choices, I've finally landed in something that is my dream job and I'm super happy. And I found this like kind of lovely balance between work and yoga life. And I'm proud of what I've achieved with Yoga World as well. Like, that's not a brand, that's just my Yoga World of, kind of teaching and... And doing my teacher training while I was doing my PhD was pretty proud moment. So they'll be my proud things.
Yeah, I was going to say you've got a PhD, so that scores quite highly on the tick box list. Like, should I have been calling you Dr. O through this whole...
Or, well, from now on, Jules, I'd appreciate that. No, I find it really embarrassing, which I'm kind of, I don't know why, I need to get over that, but my work is using it. And I think I'm going to get my business card with Dr. Rowe so I can like flash that professionally.
But I think that's the thing, like I don't know because I haven't got a doctorate, but I guess as women, we're sort of embarrassed when people would use a professional title like that. Like, you've studied, you're totally entitled to be a doctor in that professional capacity, and it's good that your work want to use it because they're like, yeah, look, she's respectable, she's got credentials. But it's weird, isn't it, how we would feel embarrassed to stand up and be like, yeah, I am a doctor,
you know? absolutely. And I've been reading a couple of books actually about like women empowerment, and it's really made me realize like, oh wow, like we do like put ourselves down and don't shout about our successes, which is ridiculous. So that's made me think, yeah, I might flash the doctor a little bit more. Mainly I'd like to do it on my passport so that I'd get an upgrade, maybe. First class, please.
Can you, I didn't know you could put like doctor on your passport.
Yeah. But my biggest failure there would be I'd have had too many gins and they'd be like, is there a doctor on the plane? Dr. Rowe. I'll be sloshed like, I'm not a real doctor. I can just put a plaster on.
You've also turned American after your gins.
Yeah, that happens.
I don't know why. That's really funny.
I have no idea why.
Oh, sorry. I can understand why that would be a concern. I think that would probably trump me not wanting to put doctor on my passport in case of an emergency.
Exactly.
And people are like, there's someone seriously ill here, and you're not only pissed and American now, you're not qualified as a medical doctor. It's like Ross in Friends, isn't it, when he's like, I'm a doctor.
yeah, exactly. I would be that person.
So what's next for you on the yoga front, Zoe? Like, obviously, if there's training and workshops in London that I see, I'm going to come and be in touch with you and be like, oh, we're going to go and see this chap or that lady what's next for you on the yoga front? What are your plans?
So I've got an ambition to marry my two passions of yoga and social impact together. I'd like to do more of that. So I'm really passionate about kind of making yoga more accessible to more people. I mean, as much as people try and make it, you know, classes in town halls or, I don't know, schools or hospitals, wherever it might be, there is a massive gap between the people who can afford to go to studios, afford these jazzy leggings that we would like for free. And like, you know, there's so many people that will never be able, well, currently don't have access to yoga, that could really need it, like for mental purposes, for physical benefit. So yeah, I'm really passionate about kind of bringing those two worlds together. Recently trained in yoga nidra, which just blew me away of like how powerful that is. So mixing that with yin, with the more kind of physical stuff, I think that's what I'm going to be looking into next. Watch this space.
Yes, we will. I did. You did your yin train? Oh, your nidra training with Dawn, right? Didn't you? She was on.
Yes, I did.
Episode 2 of this podcast. So yeah,
it was incredible. Yeah, like really, really game changer.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize it would be as amazing as it was. So
there's a lot of napping going on as well, isn't there?
Well, no, I've learned not to nap now.
So have I, actually.
Yeah,
it took me incredible. A while.
Yeah, same.
Oh, brilliant. So if you weren't a yoga teacher or a social innovation consultant, Zoe, what would you be?
I would love to be a travel yoga writer.
Wow.
I mean, I don't think I need to explain that. It just sounds incredible, doesn't
yeah.
it? You get to travel the world, do yoga at different places. I'll even teach at different places, giving back and all that. and yeah, and write about it. I'd love that.
I'd love that. I think there must be people that do that, mustn't there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially going to like remote places and teaching. Oh, how amazing would it be to teach people in remote, like, areas of different countries to then be able to, they can then teach their local communities.
Yeah.
So it's like a, I don't know, that would be really nice.
It would be nice. That's good. And that brings us on to our quick fire questions round. So don't think about it. Don't overthink it. It's just quick fire. Whatever comes into your mind, just go for it. Okay. First question, biscuit or chocolate bar?
Biscuit.
Favorite color?
Turquoise.
Who is your hero?
I went to say Ross.
Oh, you can still say Ross. Oh, Rusty, Russ, nice. Ross. That's lovely. Oh, yeah, well, keep it as that. You don't need, like, let him listen and then keep me like, oh, you listened right to the end.
Ross. Say a bit louder.
What is the best fruit or vegetable?
Oh, God, that is a very hard question. I'm overthinking it. Aubergine.
Song or a dance?
Dance.
What's your star sign?
Aquarius.
Who would play you in a film of your life?
Oh. Oh, who's that girl that was on Hunger Games? She's like feminine, but quite boyish.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Beachside or poolside?
Ooh, poolside.
Do you eat eggs? And if so, how do you like them?
I do eat eggs. I like them poached.
Is there any product that you couldn't live without?
I love gin. First thing that came to mind.
What is at the top of your bucket list?
Oh, I would like to travel India.
Okay, wow. Have you been before? Just a little aside.
Yeah, but only to one area for like a couple of weeks.
What's the most ridiculous outfit you've ever worn?
Only one? oh, wow. I don't know. Ridiculous outfit. Oh, I did dress up as we had like a 70s party, and I thought like this sparkly all-in-one jumpsuit thing would look really fit, and like with crimped hair, it was too big for me because I'm super short, and the crimped hair looked terrible. And yeah, it wasn't great look. It wasn't a great look.
What's your favorite place in the whole wide world?
At the moment, home. I'm loving home at the moment.
Oh, that's a nice answer. What's the last show that you binge watched?
Oh, there's been quite a few. Oh my God, I don't know if I should admit to this. Weinstein's series was, wow, that made me mad. Not Weinstein, Epstein.
Oh,
Epstein.
Yeah. I've seen that advertised on Netflix. Would you recommend it?
It made me really mad. I've got mixed emotions. Mm. I think it's good for raising awareness, but it just made me so mad at the injustice in the world. And again, about women just not really having a say. But on a happier note, I watched Killing Eve. That was a really good series.
Yes. Have you seen the second series as well?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Really good.
It's very good. Is there only two series? No, there's a third one. I think there's three. This is the third one, isn't it?
But I've watched something that's finished.
Yeah. Okay. So we know, yeah, what happens. Yeah. It's the third one.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. No, it is amazing, isn't it? And what amazed me was Jodie Comer when they were winning all those awards, and she's got the strongest Liverpudlian accent. She's not at all like Villanelle. Not, I don't know what I was expecting, but not who I saw accepting these awards. Absolutely brilliant. I just love her.
Incredible, yeah. Incredible.
And lastly, because this is a yoga-based podcast, what's your favourite yoga pose?
Ooh, I think it changes depending on my mood. The pose that makes me feel the best after is like a backbend wheel. Only do it when you're warmed up, kids. Or I love a downward dog as well, you know.
Good old Dee Dee. Good. And then that brings us on to Savasana sounds. So what's your favourite music or sound for Savasana? Not necessarily, have you got any advice or tracks that you recommend that we should have a listen to? That kind of chilled vibe.
So I personally prefer more of like a dramatic instrumental song, like, or tune, rather than ding dong gang dongs, or, you know, I don't know, something ommy, which are all great if I'm in the mood. But yeah, I do like, if you had a really hard practice and then you have quite a traumatic instrumental thing, it just makes me feel quite empowered. So I do have one that I've been listening to at the moment. It's quite wordy. It's called A Winged Victory for the Sullen. That's like the people, the band. And the song is called Requiem for the Static King, Part One. I mean, it sounds like a TV series or a book. It's not. It's a
okay.
song.
All right. I'll put it, make sure you send that to me, and then I'll put it on the show notes at the end. Okay. So people can like have a look at it. Have you listened to part two? Is there a part two?
I don't know. I haven't looked for part two, interestingly, but I'm going to do it after this.
It could be many parts. You're missing out. You could be missing out on a whole world of these Requiem.
I feel like I want to backtrack on what my favourite yoga pose is.
You can backtrack.
Like, I'm gonna sound so boring.
You can backtrack. I mean, it's supposed to be quick fire and come from, you know, your heart, but you don't want to be a downward dog or a wheel.
I don't know.
Wheel's not boring. Downward dog's not boring.
Yeah, I like a bit of a wheel. Yeah, you're right. I'm going to stick to my wheel.
What did you want to say now? I'm intrigued.
Now I want to be like, oh no, I love like, you know, a scorpion handstand and scorpion pincher and then going into a wheel. I just love that. I can't do it though.
You've got American again. There's that gin infused doctor on the plane doing yoga. You've got like a persona. It's really funny.
That's apparently who I think Cool Zoe sounds.
Cool Zoe is definitely from LA. I can tell. She loves
gin. She's great at yoga.
She's a proper doctor, like a medical doctor, and she busts out handstands at the back of planes.
Oh yeah, she's great.
Oh, I feel like I've got to know you so much better, Zoe.
Thank you so much for coming. Well, not coming, you're at home, but thank you for coming online and speaking to me. It's been really lovely to catch up with you, so thank you.
Oh, ditto.
Listeners, you can contact Zoe through her email. It's zoe.rowe@outlook.com, or you can find her on Instagram, Zoe Rowe, that's ZOERROWE_yoga. Thanks, Zoe.
Thank you.
Please tell her what you thought of the podcast, and if you've got any questions for her, I'm sure she'll be happy to answer them. So that was great. I loved chatting to Zoe. Just got a little update for you. Since I recorded the podcast with her, Russ, or Rusty as he used to be known, now known as Ross, so we all know that now, I'm enlightened and feel bad for calling him Russ, is asked Zoe to marry him. So that's fantastic news. Congratulations to Zoe from me. Hope it's a lovely engagement and beautiful marriage going forwards. So I wanted to share that with you. So wish you all congratulations to Zoe. And also, I had a listen of Zoe's Savasana Sounds, A Winged Victory for the Sullen, Requiem for the Static King Part 1. Yes, there is a Part 2, and it's amazing. The first piece of music is, the Part 1 is amazing. So I thought I'd also give you a couple of my favourite songs, not songs, they're not songs, they're tunes, they're not even tunes, they are sounds or music that I like to listen to when I'm relaxing or in Shavasana. So the first is by Billow Observatory, that's B-I-L-L-O-W Observatory, and it's called Bright Lands Rising. And the second one I wanted to share with you is called Buren, B-U-R-R-E-N, by Echo Grid. I really like those. So also, if you have a listen to that, then let me know what you think. All right. Take care. See you next time. Bye. You've been listening to That Yoga Woman's podcast with me, Jules Buchanan. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it. Share it on social media. Rate it, write a nice review, and subscribe to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Links and information can be found on the episode page in the podcast section of my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/podcast. If you'd like to show some support for the podcast, you can do that through PayPal. The donation link is www.paypal.me/thatyogawoman. The last thing I'll mention is my line of organic cotton yoga-inspired tops. I designed a small range of vest tees and sweatshirts that are perfect to teach or do yoga in. I really love the feel of them. They wash so well. I've bought them for myself, and then I'm selling them on as well because I think they're so great. That's how much I love them. So have a look online. Check out my shop on my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/shop. Have a look around my store and make an order. See you soon.